You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
In the communications sector, there is a revolution taking place.
Look how far we've come. A third of the music released last year in this country was not even released on a CD.
Do you use a credit card online?
No, I live in Russia.
I'm concerned about the way the company's being run and the fiber to the node network.
Unless we can have clarity that we will not be subjected to further separation, we are not in a position to lodge an RFP bid.
You can't make it a technical game because the very people who are trying to protect are smarter than you.
We want to really change the world by making things so special you've got to have it.
On air, on the internet and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody and welcome to the second last edition of Tech Talk Radio for 2009. I'm Andrew McComb. The internet has been with us for many years now, and wouldn't you think that everyone would know how to use a search engine? Well, strange as it may seem, as Google cracks the decade, there are still people about, some even in the Tech Talk office, that still don't understand how search engines work. To this day, I'm still lost as to why some people insist on typing the URL into the Google search box instead of the address bar at the top of the browser. All that aside, Hitwise is a company which monitors what people do online. They don't know who you are, they just know what you do. And in a recent report on searching and browsing habits of Australian internet users, there's some interesting changes in the way Australians find things online. The question on the tip of everyone's tongue? Are social media sites replacing search engines? Well, according to Hitwise, in 2009, Australians have spent more and more time on social media websites, and the category has grown by a massive 25% compared to 2008. The use of search engines is still growing, up about 8.6%, but social media are planned to take over, especially during the Christmas season. Australia is one of the nations that uses search engines the most, followed by the US and the UK. As for market share, Google is still dominating the search landscape with over 87.1% of market share. Bing has grown to 4.7 from 4.1 compared to 2008, while Yahoo remains stable with around 2.3%. But how has our search behaviour evolved in recent times? The most significant change is the rise of brand-related searches. 14.2% of searches are brand-related. Compared to 2006, brand searches have increased by 62.5%. Most of the top 20 searches in Google are brand names or brand-related phrases. The most popular brands are social media, followed by online-based brands, eBay, Seek and Hotmart, for example. Only few traditional brands are making it to the top 20. Search engine users have also refined their way of searching. Long-tail keywords are getting more and more popular. Compared to 2008, one-word searches have decreased by 5.3%. Two-word searches have also decreased. Three-word searches are 24.2% and have increased. Four-word searches are now 14.3% and have also increased. And five-word searches, they're 14.3% also and have increased 2.2% compared to 2008. Interestingly, Bing is still heavily relying on one to two word searches, rather than Google, which tends to generate longer phrases. One of the most amazing facts is the contribution of paid searches against the traffic to all websites in Australia. According to Hitwise's data, paid search contributes to only 4.8% of website traffic. Such figures strongly reinforce the need to focus on search engine optimization, which should generate most of the traffic to your website.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Adam looks under the hood of the new and improved TiVo. Google Analytics declared illegal in Germany. We revisit the relevance of online news in the age of Twitter. And a Sydney Apple software developer receives Apple legal threats and a rare personal email from the man himself, CEO Steve Jobs. First up, though, here's Dr. Ron with the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Rupert Murdoch and Bill Gates combine forces against Google. the federal government rejects calls for an NBN costs-benefit analysis. TiVo now offers video on demand over broadband in Australia. Scientists look for subparticle collisions in CERN's Large Hadron Collider. And a Japanese man marries his longtime virtual sweetheart in a Nintendo DS game. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Rupert Murdoch and Bill Gates have joined forces against a perceived common enemy. Both News Corporation and Microsoft are now combining their efforts to get people to pay for online news content, revolting against search giant Google, which routinely indexes news headlines and stories. While Mr. Murdoch has objected to Google indexing News Corp stories for some time, Microsoft will now pay News Corp to remove its contents from the Google search index. That same News Corp content will then be made available on Microsoft's search engine, Bing. Industry analysts say the union will have little effect on Google's prominence. Associate Professor and Director of the New York School of Journalism, Mr. Jeff Jarvis.
You know, the newspaper industry is looking for enemies. It's looking for people to blame for their troubles when only they should blame themselves. They've had 15 years to figure out the future on the web, and they haven't. And so now they're desperate, and they're looking for someone to blame, and Google is the most convenient to blame because it's the most successful online.
The ABC's John Shovelin asked Professor Jarvis what a Microsoft News Corp collaboration might achieve.
A Microsoft News Corp deal would be at most a mosquito bite on an elephant's butt. It wouldn't be unnoticed. It wouldn't have any impact whatsoever on Google.
The ABC last week reported that Bing in the United States has just 10% of search engine market share, while Google has more than 60%. In the UK, Google has more than 80% search engine market share. The federal government has rejected calls for a costs-benefit analysis of the proposed national broadband network. The Rudd government has agreed with just one of the 12 recommendations made in the Senate committee's report. The one recommendation in agreeance advocates the development of new applications that promote economic development, as well as improvements in health, education, and energy efficiency. The committee recommended the undertaking of a rigorous cost-benefit analysis before new mainland assets were purchased for the $43 billion network. According to AAP last week, the government is continuing to refuse to conduct such an analysis and has also refused to agree to the committee's recommendation that an implementation study be provided by the 31st of December. But a spokesman for Communications Minister, Senator the Honourable Stephen Conroy, said the opposition was simply attempting to delay the NBN's rollout while also failing to produce a communications policy of its own. The spokesman also said that construction work was already underway in Tasmania and that the implementation study on the national rollout of the NBN would be completed in early 2010. Construction of the national broadband network, which will provide fibre-to-the-premises internet for up to 90% of Australian homes, is expected to take about 8 years. The Channel 7 TiVo conglomeration last week launched a video-on-demand service over broadband internet and an upgraded 320GB set-top box. The announcements were made in time for Christmas home entertainment shopping and are aimed squarely at the fierce competition from Foxtel. Casper On Demand is TiVo's brand name for what it promises will be a world of broadband entertainment, including new release movies, hit TV shows, as well as free music videos, artist interviews, and music concerts. The new on-demand service will use progressive download over a subscriber's existing broadband connection and will complement the existing free-to-air DVB-T services available on TiVo. IT Wire reports that the system is using a number of network components to deliver video on demand to subscribers. A similar deployment in New Zealand has recently proved successful and popular for TiVo. Scientists at CERN's Large Hadron Collider have circulated two beams simultaneously for the first time in an effort to see subparticle collisions amongst near-speed-of-light protons. According to a CERN press release last week, two circulating beams have brought the first collisions in the LHC. The protons within the particle beams were circulating in opposite directions, which gave the operators of the world's largest, most energetic, and most expensive accelerator a chance to look for collisions at two points. The Director General of CERN's LHC said it was a great achievement to have come this far in so short a time, but that scientists needed to keep a sense of perspective and that there's still much to do before they can start the LHC physics program. And a Japanese man has married his longtime virtual sweetheart in a Nintendo DS game. The game invites players to select a girlfriend, then take her out on dates, perform boyfriend-related duties, and even romance the virtual characters by literally kissing the DS's touchscreen. But Cell 9000 was so enamoured with his virtual girlfriend that he married the character in a seemingly official but not legally binding ceremony in Tokyo last week. The Sydney Morning Herald reported that the reception included a priest, an MC, a DJ, even photo slideshows and wedding music, and that the entire event was streamed live on a Japanese video sharing website. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Last week on the show, you were on your soapbox.
Different thing altogether.
Yeah. This came a day after the ABC director of television, Kim Dalton, warned of the potential onslaught of cheap foreign content.
But this is a special network just for mobile broadband.
And if they were pulling down a huge file from a server...
Oh, look, we've got new firmware. Would you like it? Yes, no. And you go, yes.
Anyway.
Misleading advertising.
It's all very confusing.
Yeah, that's all right. As long as it's very well protected.
Yes, great. Trust me, I'm an editor.
They're unsecurable, they will get infected with viruses, and you will be the source of the spam that we all complain about.
They're obviously wanting to see your Mo, Dr. Movember.
Dr. Movember.
Are you finding it it's more pleasant to use than Windows XP was?
Absolutely.
And I'd like to stress that Dr. Ronnie is joking. Anyone who...
I'm nowhere near that advanced yet.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, welcome. I'm Andrew. Across the desk from me is Justin, Ron and Graham. Hello, gentlemen. How are you? This is Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Andrew.
Hi, hello. Yeah, good. That was a fairly low-key introduction. What a week it's been. I've had fun. I'm sort of half asleep, but I'll make it through tonight's show. It's been interesting so far. Anyway, on tonight's show, we have all sorts of things, all manner of things, from Nick Minchin through to Telstra through to Apple, you name it, we have it. So it's going to be an interesting show. Our second last show for 2009 live, and then we're going to repeat things at you. Because
the penultimate show for 2009.
Isn't that next year? Next week? Penultimate?
No, next week's the last one.
The ultimate.
The ultimate. Okay, so penultimate.
Yes.
It's like when you climb Mount Everest and you just get to the bit before it then fall over. Is that the penultimate trip?
No, that'd be your last one. I would have thought.
It depends on how far you fell.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. Oh, dear. Yes. Well, welcome wherever you might happen to be listening to this show for the last day of spring. I hope you enjoyed it because it's summer tomorrow. If unless you're listening to us in the United States late and then you've still got another day to go. Or unless you're listening to us on a pod... Oh, look, listen, I'm okay.
Yes, it might already be December.
It could be hot already. Yeah, anyway, lots to talk about tonight, and that's not one of... I had an interesting week this week with Mr. Kaspersky's product, because he thrust a update on me.
Now, you're talking about antivirus software, are you?
I am. Now, this is a bouquet and also a bit of a dagger, throwing both ways. But anyway, what happened was, as you guys are probably aware, we use these Wacom tablet things in the office. We don't use mice anymore. We just don't know how to use them.
Instead of having a mouse, you have a pen and a flat
that's right.
sort of surface to draw on.
That's right. Now, that's the whole office. You'd be hard to find a mouse anywhere in our office. Now, what happened was Mr. Kaspersky sent out a new update. Please install this. Okay, no worries. And we all did.
So new antivirus software, yeah.
New antivirus. So just an update to the existing software. And everyone said, why won't our tablets work? What he basically done is whenever you moved the mouse, when his dialog box was up on the screen, whenever you moved using the pen, it wouldn't. It would just sit there and the cursor would disappear. But we thought, oh, this is unique. I've never had this problem with Eugene software before. And then what we did, when we actually bailed out of one and got into his forum and started sending, hey, what have you done to us, emails to him in support.
Were there hundreds of thousands of other people asking the same question?
Well, no, not at this point in time, because basically we just rolled it out as soon as they put it on. You know, when you say, please update, there's a patch or there's an update for you, we just click the button to do it because trust is everything with that man.
Yep.
And it just didn't work for us. So anyway, I jumped onto the forum. Now, to their credit, these guys are fantastic. We were having an email chat within basically minutes of lodging the help us request. I thought, oh, here we go. Roll back and they'll get back to us in a week or so. But no, we actually resolved the issue within a matter of probably 2 to 3 hours, which was excellent.
So did they bring out a patch to the software to no, fix
we've
the
just,
problem?
We've just disabled a certain function of the program.
Oh, okay. So you've worked around it rather than really fixed it.
Yeah. But they've obviously now aware of the problem that we had.
So it'd be interesting to see if the next version
solves the problem.
Yeah, but anyway, from going from one...
Perhaps Wacom should send Kaspersky a tablet to use in their lab.
Well, I think half the problem was it was a driver as opposed... Yeah, good idea. Come on, Kaspersky. Yes.
Wacom.
That is a telltale sign. It means Kaspersky doesn't use Wacom, Wacom products. Interesting.
Well, we should say Wacom.
Wacom, I beg your pardon. You're right, Andrew. Yep.
Wacom. So that was my...
Only people from Wacom say Wacom.
Well, there's probably people... there's another thing. It's like beta and beta
in
the broadcasting industry. We have beta cam here. Everywhere else in the world, they have beta cam.
Do they?
It throws you a bit.
Mm.
Have you told them that they're wrong?
No, I wasn't going to go. I'll do that when I'm over there in April. I'll say, by the way, we call this beta cam.
Yeah.
HD cam. anyway, that was my news for the week, my little tassel with technology.
Tech adventure.
Anyone can one up that this evening?
I took your advice from last week.
Oh, really? You're the one.
And hooked up one of these Western Digital TV gizmos.
Oh, you got one of those little streamy boxes, yeah?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What was your experience like?
Well, in some ways very good. I haven't got the advantage you've got. I haven't got a fancy big plasma high def, you know, fancy screen to connect it to. I've only got my prehistoric TV from the 1980s.
Yeah, but it works in that.
Yep. So I connected to that, and it came up, and it's surprisingly good. You can browse through all my folders on my hard drive and find all the media files.
Didn't have to do anything, did you? You just turned it on.
Didn't have to do a great deal, no. As soon as it could see the internet, as soon as I'd pressed the button to configure the network, it offered me the firmware upgrade you talked about.
Oh, yes.
And that installed fairly seamlessly.
Yep.
Couple of gripes.
Oh, there's a big sigh there.
One is it does not play the recorded TV programs from Windows Media Center.
And that was a specific question that you had for Andrew.
I haven't
last
tried
week.
That. What is it? A .ts?
No, they're .wtv.
Oh. Put it on the wish list. There's a Western Digital wish list on their website, what you want to play.
I think it's on there already, actually.
Oh, okay. You've been there, have you?
People have already made quite a noise about this when I started investigating.
Probably involves royalties to someone, I would imagine.
That's possibly the problem. I mean, the thing's already got a fair bit of licensed software in it with all the Dolby stuff in it and other things. Yeah, it would be an extra thing that they may have to pay for to be able to play that back. Funny thing is that it plays back the old Media Center format, the MS, I can't remember the name of it, some funny format that the old Media Center used to record in.
It probably don't have patents on it or trademarks or something.
Even though it's not on the list of supported formats. So the old version isn't on the list of supported formats, but it plays it anyway.
Mm.
But the new version, it doesn't play.
Okay.
Now, there is... Windows 7 does come with the utility to convert to the old version, but it's just a pain in the neck.
But you don't want to do that.
It's just a pain in the neck to have to do it, yeah.
Yeah. No, I must admit, I haven't come across any things that hasn't played yet. I have come across some sync issues with some audio, with some formats.
Okay.
But other than that, if you... I've overcome that. There's a workaround. Yep. But other than that, it's been flawless. It's been really good. With the... the only downside, too, though, is that I found is there is an audio format on Blu-ray discs which it can't handle.
Oh, okay.
And traditionally, that's the one you want.
It would always be the case, I guess. But, yeah, no, that hasn't been an issue. So, because not having high def, I don't have a lot of Blu-ray content.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll work around it in the not-too-distant future. But
it appears to play DVD content as well. So if you've got a ripped DVD, it'll play the content, but it doesn't understand the menu structures. So it just plays the VOB files in whatever order they happen to be in.
Sequential order.
Yeah.
So if it starts off at one and goes to two.
So you might skip through, oh, yeah, that's an animation from menu number three, and that's an animation from menu number one, and that's the... And then eventually you get to the main movie and it plays it through pretty well.
Yeah.
So, interesting. The other thing it doesn't do too well, you've got a nice remote control so you can do things, but there's no facility... let's say, for example, that you've watched... you're watching a show... might be an hour and a half show, you get 45 minutes into the show and you have to go out. So you shut everything down,
Just press pause.
Well, you could do that and that would work.
Yep.
But
it won't resume, is what you're saying.
Yeah,
it does.
If you press pause,
mine does.
If you press pause and leave it there, that's fine.
No, mine does. You can press stop, you can turn the unit off, and when you come back to the movie, it says, do you want to continue to cancel?
If you go and do something else in between and you come back to it, then there's no way to tell it to go to a certain distance into the file. You've got to and the fast forward feature is a little bit tedious if you're going to fast forward a long way through a file.
I'll talk to you after the show. You can step increment in 10-minute slabs.
Okay.
So there is it's.
I tried pressing the track forward button, but it didn't. It went secret, to the next track.
It's secret. It's on the tips. If you have a look on the tip site.
Oh, okay.
They've got tips of how to use the remote.
And there's a few tricks in there, are there?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I didn't think of reading the books.
Exactly. That's what everyone does. If you stand on your head with your left leg up in the air and hold the fast forward button, I think it goes forward in 5-minute increments.
Okay.
But if you have both feet on the ground, it goes forward in 10.
Mm.
So it's good.
All right.
Well, I'm glad you had relative success. Well, what do you think? A sub $200 box, value for money.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, great value.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. You can take a chance on it, even if it doesn't. Mm. We now know that it doesn't play the new format Windows Media files, but well, there you go.
Yeah, it'll be really nice if it did, but yeah, but for the price, it's still a nice box to have around.
Excellent. Now, Dr. Ron, just before we go to you, your stop news, stop information news, your whatever you were talking about as you walked in. That's the word.
I said,
stop press. What happened? Telstra? You mentioned Telstra, stop press, and something about unions.
I said, we've got a stop press tonight with some Telstra news. The following is a message which has been published on the website of the CEPU, Communications Union. Now, this is a communications union that represents an enormous number of Telstra employees. And if you want to have a look at the website, you can go to cepu.net.au. The media release says, can you believe it? Mick Rocker, Group Managing Director, he's the new gentleman that's been put in charge of the exchange groups, amongst other things. He wants to clean up, repair, and spruce up Telstra's network sites throughout Australia, basically with volunteers, apparently. This is the Telstra equivalent...
Sorry?
Yes. Wait, it gets better. Yeah. This is the Telstra equivalent of funding the armed forces through cake stalls and charity tea parties, isn't it? says the press release. This has got to be an April Fool's Day joke. Telstra management have spent decades contracting out the various cleaning and maintenance at these sites to the cheapest bidder, ignoring the dangers to employees and the public due to inadequate maintenance and demanding that the work efforts and targets of their employees be aimed elsewhere. On top of that, Telstra management decided decades ago that exchanges shouldn't be manned. This is true. And following that, they proceeded to dehumanise the sites, taking out all the facilities that make them even a little human-friendly.
Like a kitchenette and a toilet and a place to wash your hands,
a telly and a little restroom, whatever, to ensure employees visited them as rarely as possible. I think what they're finding now is that more and more contractors than ever are visiting telephone exchanges. Now, after decades of deliberate neglect, all of a sudden site maintenance and clean-up becomes a priority, but it's apparently to be done by volunteers... employees, and even their families by charity, not paid work, but unpaid work to be performed for and on behalf of one of the most profitable companies in Australia.
Why would anyone volunteer to do this?
I don't think anyone will be, Graham. Apart from the principal, Mick, we have to also say your timing in this is absolutely breathtaking. Here is the senior management of Telstra, we presume you have discussed it with others, saying to mainly EBA-based staff, please volunteer to help to get management out of its self-inflicted hole. At the same time, you are discriminating against EBA employees in their pay relative to ECA employees. How do you figure this, Mick?
I love the way they spin these things.
Oh, yeah, there's a fair bit of spin, but there's some interesting points raised. Even with AWA employees, do you expect them to volunteer their own time in the year that you confine their annual pay increase to less than 2%, which represents a real wage cut? CEPU's view to employees, for what it's worth, and this has never been discussed with us by management anyway, is to tell management to forget it. Pay for work done out of Telstra's near record profits, and this time get it done properly and regularly, and then you won't have a problem. Further, if you want EBA employees to go above and beyond their normal work, then start treating them like equals and not paying second-class wage rates and second-class pay increases. That was signed by Len Cooper, the CEPU branch secretary. Now, as a result of Mr. Rocker's letter, which has been sent to employees, at least some members also received a text message. The text message said...
Oh, what, they've asked to pop in on the weekend.
Volunteers are sought for a clean-up exchange day, 5 December, a Saturday morning. Exchanges are to be cleaned... exchanges to be cleaned are yet to be nominated. Barbecue for lunch supplied.
Who's paying for that?
Family members are also invited.
It doesn't say who's paying for the barbecue lunch, but it says supplied, so maybe the organisation will pay for the couple of sausages and a bit of bread.
Isn't that bizarre? Apart from the public liability issues.
Tell you what's also bizarre is a spelling of sort.
Yeah, that's a bit odd. I glossed over that, but you're right, Graham. That is very, very odd. Apart from the public liability issues of having friends and family at a workplace, Telstra have got a responsibility under the Occupational Health and Safety Act to maintain a workplace in a safe and efficient fashion. If they're not cleaning toilets, they're not providing kitchens and basic amenities, that's just really, really strange.
You know, if it wasn't so bizarre, I'd say that was just funny, but it's not. It's just so far left of field in this day of modern, you know, EBAs and the likes like that.
It really is. But the word, the insider word within Telstra is that a lot of exchanges that used to be manned are now no longer manned. There's nobody that's rostered there or assigned to work there full time. They have people coming and going at all hours. They have contractors, they have Telstra employees, and no one's doing any real maintenance, any building maintenance, any cleaning, and a lot of people are entirely fed up with this. And when they got this invitation to come and work for free and to have a bit of a working bee, do some painting, do some washing and cleaning and scrubbing. And
working bee. I don't have enough time to do working bees myself, let alone.
It's just very, very, very strange. Mm. So the union is going to oppose and strongly recommend to its members that, yes, they don't participate in this action. And we'll keep you posted. We'll let you know how the exchange cleanup day goes on the 5th of December.
Maybe they could get the guy who does Keep Australia Clean. What's his name? The guy from Sydney?
Who was
Clean Up Australia?
Yeah,
you know, maybe he could get on the case and rally the troops. So, but anyway, I reckon those exchanges, they'll just be bits of wire on the floor anyway, wouldn't they? If you just come in with your blower vac and just blow them out.
Well, from what I've been told unofficially, yeah, like there's rubbish everywhere, and you know, people just come and go, and they don't take any pride in
really?
The workplace because it's not anybody's workplace anymore.
If you work for Telstra and you're in an exchange, might be listening to us now, take a snap and email it to us. see what the state of the floor is like in your local telephone exchange.
Yeah, let us know if we're going off on a tangent or if this is a very real issue for you. Feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
Now, speaking of tangents, and this is not on the rundown because that wasn't either.
No, that's all right.
Telstra is finally abandoning its legendary 200 megabit broadband plan. And Adam Turner summed it up beautifully. I just came across. I retweeted his tweet and all that sort of stuff, but that's his headline. Telstra abandons 200 meg broadband plans. Now, if you remember back, well, I think we've had these for about 2 or 3 years, maybe longer. Time flies. Where Telstra, when they offered their initial broadband plans to consumers, one of them was for some amazing fee, you would get all of 200 megabytes of download, which you could probably nail in a day, half an hour if you really tried, especially at today's broadband rate.
Easily, yep.
And then they went on and charged pretty impressive over-usage fees, I think in the tens of dollars of megabytes and things like that. So you could rack up a bill very, very quickly.
Not only that, but the speeds that those plans offered the users were less than five times normal dial-up speed. So they weren't broadband.
Only 256K.
Yeah, they weren't broadband in any real sense at all.
$130 per gig you went over.
Yeah, that's pretty excessive, isn't it?
It was. So they've finally seen the light. We're going to talk a little bit more about Telstra. They've changed a lot of their their broadband plans. Mm. And not forgetting the T-Box tomorrow. You going to get one?
The T-Box. I'm going to watch with interest the early reviews and see how it's put through its paces.
Well, it's going to be very interesting. I was sort of having a chat to a colleague during the course of the week and saying how it's very much becoming a content-driven landscape these days. It's not so much the speed of the broadband anymore. It's now becoming who you want to sign up with and why. What are you going to get for free? Now, Adam's going to be talking to the people from TiVo tonight to find out what they're doing with their new Casper launch. But, yeah, it's sort of anyone with a broadband speed of around 8 megabits per second can potentially pull data off a server somewhere and watch it relatively, you know, good quality on a television near you. Even YouTube, because that comes down, and Graham's probably... Have you tried YouTube on your little box yet, Graham?
That's
pretty cool, isn't it?
Worked very well, yeah.
So you can just pull that off the internet and watch it on your telly for next to nothing. And then if you find content providers that team up with your ISP, then chances are you get the content for free. Mm. So I think in the next little bit, we're going to see a lot of, you know, Telstra coming in. They're wanting to become a provider now. Put their own television channels on. We've got issues with people from the United States, or should I say non-Australian content such as Hulu, trying to find their way into the market. And there's a hell of a lot of proxy servers out there too, don't forget, where you can pretend to be in the UK and want to watch the BBC and likewise in the US. So what's going to be different? In like, where will we be in 12 months' time? Who's going to be providing what service and who's going to be doing it for free? Because bandwidth is going to become not much of an issue unless you live way, way, way out into the sticks.
It's going to become cheaper and cheaper over time, and we can see that with this move by Telstra. Even Telstra's getting in on the act.
Hulu is actually an interesting case study because most of the people that I know that use the Apple set-top boxes and the XBMC clients are actually really keen to actually hook into Hulu. So it's more people from Australia chasing them to get an account with the US firm because of the content that they provide, and the interface they use is pretty clean.
We're going to see a lot of strange content, I think, coming on the television fairly shortly. I had been speaking to another colleague during the course of the week who was proposing to put, like, you know, the fish tank that Channel 31 used to have here in town?
Yeah, Fish TV.
Fish TV, yeah. Just for those of you who aren't familiar with that, when one of the community stations started here in Melbourne, when they had non-scheduled program on, they just pointed a camera at a fish tank, and it became a bit of a cult icon, a bit legendary sort of stuff, you know, a bit of a desktop on your TV.
So they're going crazy about Panda Vision in Thailand. We're talking about last week. So we had 10 years before that, we had
Absolutely.
Fish TV.
You watch very shortly. We'll have channels of desktop savers, for want of a better term, shortly.
Fireplaces
we'll
have, in winter.
And, that's right. Yeah. We'll have all this bandwidth, and what are we going to put on channel 9,632? I know. Let's put some Eskimos fishing and just lock a camera off somewhere and put it up online. You're going to start seeing all that sort of stuff creep through fairly shortly because bandwidth is not becoming the issue that it once was. So, anyway, that probably leads on to Mr. Nick Minchin. He was. He's no longer. He was the Shadow Minister for Communications and obviously sat opposite Mr. Conroy. And he's basically tossed in the towel when it comes to the communications portfolio because I think he's firmly entrenched in the Senate trying to, you know, drum up some support. Oh, actually, no, he's trying to get rid of the ETS, which is the carbon trading package, which is before, well, it's what's destroying the Liberal Party at the moment. Without getting political about it, just have a look on any newspaper and what do you see? So he's basically jumped ship. So who's going to replace? Well, actually, I think they've got to work out who's going to lead them first and then who's going to replace. Do we need someone who's a bit switched on when it comes to technology or will they just...
It'd make a nice change.
Well, we could put Senator Coonan back in. No. What was her name? How We Forget. Yeah, it was her, wasn't it?
Yeah. Senator the Honourable Helen Coonan.
Correct.
Yes.
She could pop back in. She did a reasonably good job. She just lost her job at the wrong time.
Hmm.
Yeah, no?
No.
You're not warming to me here,
no,
boys.
No, I'm not. No. I'm colding to you.
Yeah.
Yes. No.
Let's move right along.
Okay. Sorry.
My eyes just glaze over that's when I hear idea. All this. There's nothing else on the radio at the moment, a news radio, apart from you hear things like you hear leadership challenge, you hear double dissolution, you hear spill, party
who's,
spill, leadership
who's
spill.
Support, who's promised got, who what?
Yeah.
Yep, that's right.
Nick Minchin's going to do this and Joe Hockey's going to do that. And there's going to
be all over by the time people are listening to this.
Yeah, probably. There's going to be a vote and someone else is going to vote. Someone's going to have an emission and someone's going to have a... they're going to vote to have a motion and all this... and all this stuff. You know, your eyes just glaze over. It's like, what? Yeah, whatever. Just get on with it.
Graham's lost interest. He's checking the equipment in the studio.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. No, it just it frustrates me.
It's right, just a topical thing today. I thought, that's interesting.
Look, it's important to talk about. Yeah, who's going to fill his post? Yeah, so so he's resigned from the shadow ministry.
Yeah, he won't be the last either, I suspect.
hasn't resigned over a communications issue. He's resigned over the...
a leadership issue.
Yeah. So I guess we'll have to wait till we see the shake-up and there'll be a whole reshuffle once the leadership thing's sorted.
Mm. Anyway, just as well, we don't live in Germany is all I can say at the moment because Google Analytics, which is a very useful tool for all web developers, if you're not familiar with it, if you start a website, you can put this little bit of snippet of code on your website and log into Google every other day and it'll tell you who's visited and what they've done and how they've done it and what they did and what their mother had for dinner and all those sort of interesting things that you really wanted to know about your website.
Yep.
And you've gone, wow. Anyway, that's Google Analytics. But in Germany, the German regulators have branded it as illegal. Search engine, Google, once again stomped into the strict privacy fracas in Germany. See, they've got privacy issues over there. We've got ETS issues over here.
So is it just a matter that the site owner, so if we're running a website, we just have to say that your information will be captured and used for, you know, promotional purposes.
It could be that. It's the data police, basically. Mm. Yeah, and data protection officials in Germany are warning website owners that the use of Google Analytics, the free Google Analytics, is once again facing a potential ban in Germany after several federal and regional government officials objected to it over data protection concerns, according to one of the local, or should I say, the local national newspaper, which I'm not going to pronounce.
What they want to do is to make it so that when you visit one of these websites that's collecting user information using analytics, that the user has the chance to opt out and not have their data collected.
Which means you'd have to go thinking it through. You couldn't just have it on the page, could you? Because it's too late. You'd have to have a splash screen to allow you to opt out before you even ventured to.
I don't think the court has given much thought as to the practicalities of how this
would
work.
And you'd have to do that for every page on your website.
Well, yes. They should come over here and run our legal system.
Mm,
anyway, maybe not. Yeah, earlier this year, apparently, this is not the first time in Germany, but Google's controversial panoramic mapping service, Street View, came under scrutiny as well. Once again, all the civil libertarians and privacy people in Germany just said, no, this is not good. So, I think Google and Germany just not going to go together for some time. Yeah, exactly. Just don't mix. Mm.
So does that apply to anybody who is hosting a website on a system in Germany?
I think no. No, the problem that the German, where the system runs up against the German law, is that the data is leaving the country. So it's anybody who runs a website from Germany.
Yep.
Where the privacy data gets, or whether that user information, that sensitive data,
all the tracking
leaves the country and gets stored on a server elsewhere in an outside country.
And what they're planning,
because the Google Analytics servers, of course, are in the US.
And what they're planning on doing is, if local German web developers decide to put analytics on a website, they subject themselves to fines of up to €50,000.
Mm.
So that's big bickies. If you were looking to wanting to know, but if you look at it, others can, you can, Google Analytics is not the only one out there. There's plenty of others to do, so you could probably get off on a technicality, really, couldn't you?
It'd be a good opportunity for an entrepreneurial German developer to create a similar analytics.
On my reading of it, if you ran something like Webalyzer on your own server within Germany and kept the data within your own organization, that wouldn't be a problem for their privacy laws. But because it leaves the country and goes to an external server, that's where it runs up against their privacy laws.
Hmm.
All right. Well, stay tuned and watch this space. The German version of of analytics, maybe they'll do their own internal in-house version, which doesn't leave the country to overcome it. But you never know your luck in a big city, do you?
Mm.
All right, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Now, the family pack of Windows. Do you know what a family pack of Windows is?
The plural of windows is windows. No, the
that's a very good, that's a good
transparency question. Of windows.
Yeah, that'd be good. Collective noun of windows. Anyone? No. Okay.
No.
You're about to say something there, Doctor.
No.
Windows. Microsoft have announced the fact that the Windows 7 Family Pack, containing three licenses of Windows Home Premium, will go on sale as of December 1 tomorrow. For the price of $249. Now, that's not too bad when you think about the fact that how many PCs have you got in your house?
Yeah, half a dozen, yeah.
Yeah, well, there you go. For $250, you've got three legal
upgrade
machines.
Upgrade three of them to Windows 7.
Yeah.
Hmm.
When you think about what the going rate is for just one license of that, that's not a bad offer, I wouldn't have thought. Do you agree?
Yeah, it's better than their other deals, yeah, because their upgrade prices were a bit on the steep side, if I remember.
Oh, yeah. You want to go and buy the ultimate version, you pay $400+
I'm not convinced that it's not a better deal to actually get it with a new machine rather than try and upgrade an old machine.
The OEM version.
Yeah. I think getting a new machine and getting Windows 7 with it is the best solution, because this is only going to affect people who want to keep their existing machine and get a new version of Windows to install on it.
Yes. The upgrade type of thing. Well, Microsoft copped a bit of flack over it, and responding to criticism over the lack of Windows 7 Family Pack at last month's launch of the new OS, Microsoft has rushed to roll out the bundle, which includes Windows 7 Home Premium. Now, what's Home? Do you know what the premium version of Home does? Does it let you do networking? Because you know how Windows XP Home never lets you connect to a domain or anything like that. You just have a work group and that was it. Is that how it works?
Yeah, the Windows 7 Home won't have that domain connection ability.
So you're just in a work group and you can just share, which is probably all you need for a home network, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm just bringing up the comparison chart now to see if I can...
All right, well, that stacks up as... while you do that, Graeme, that stacks up as exceptional value considering that standalone Windows upgrade Windows 7 Home Premium retails for $199. So there you go. That's what one client upgrade's worth, and you get three for $250.
Graeme's looking at a good Wikipedia chart here I hadn't seen before. That's a great little reference guide, isn't it? Wikipedia.org. If you search for Windows 7 editions, that'll find it. It's got a good, good Wikipedia table.
Yeah, it's a great table showing you all the features and which versions it is.
That's handy.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the things I've always found relatively confusing with the Windows range of products is that there seems to be a lot of different categories and a lot of different things for a lot of different people. They're trying to be confusing, I guess. But what have you got there, Graeme? Is the domain capabilities there in the home?
Yeah, no, definitely not. And the backup and restore features apparently on the home premium are local only and not to a server.
Yeah, well, that explains the lack of domain, I guess, doesn't it?
Yeah, no encrypting file system, location-aware printing, presentation mode, group policies, offline files and folder redirection. It goes on and on, yeah.
So when it says encrypted files, does that mean no NTFS, the file system that...
It's their special encrypting file system that it doesn't have. That's the new...
something else again.
Locker thing, whatever they call it.
Well, here's some interesting news too. The Windows 7 Family Pack will upgrade three home PCs from either Windows XP, which I thought was quite... Because I didn't want to do that, but now the home system does from Windows XP.
I think you'll find that although you can... If you've got an XP license, you can install it, but you'll still have to do a clean install rather than an upgrade install.
Okay. Well, that's not a bad thing in a lot of respects. I'd go clean on this any day.
In terms of the license, it's an upgrade, but in terms of the installation, it has to be installed clean. Yeah.
Okay. And then you've got Vista, obviously, which will let you go from Vista up there.
Which you can do the upgrade on, yeah.
And I didn't upgrade
from
Vista.
Not that I'd recommend that.
No, I did. I tried it on... I've got a laptop here in the studio. I tried doing an upgrade from that, and it was worse than Vista booting, and then I did a freshie, and it was all good.
Fantastic. So it is worth doing the fresh install.
Warlock in our chat room says, PCs will no longer come with MS Works, as it's not supported anymore. They will come with Office Starter, with limited versions of MS Word and MS Excel.
And watch out for the advertising coming through on an Office product near you too. It was... Yeah. They're flogging their own stuff in there. Like I connected to, I opened up Word, I think, today, and it said, do you want to do this online on the cloud? We're giving away free membership to Windows Live. I thought, how rude. All I want to do is see my web. I've paid good money for this.
Yeah.
Don't need to be bamboozled or bombarded with content like that.
No, I wouldn't bother with the cut down versions of Office. And if you're working in a business, get Office, no problem with that. If you're working at home and you're not trying to run a business off it, OpenOffice.org is the way to go.
How do you run a cut down version of a word processor? Do you miss out on the spell check or something?
I have no
idea.
Do?
There are so many options you can.
I reckon some of the journalists are running that version.
There are so many options now.
Before Adam goes, yes, I know Adam.
You know, the macro add-ins and all those other things probably don't come with it, I would think.
Oh, well, that's good. Get the home version. Get rid of it, absolutely.
You can use OpenOffice.org, and that's not just something which works in the Linux domain. It's also something which you can install on your Windows desktop. Absolutely, I use it every day.
That's completely free. If someone wants a complete Office system, which you don't want to pay a cent for, OpenOffice.org is really good.
Not only free in the sense of free beer, like you say, you don't have to pay a cent for it, but also free as it's open source. So free as in free beer, and as well as free as in free speech.
Excellent. I'm glad we sorted that. I'm just trying to link the beer in there somewhere. But no, that's good.
There's also online solutions. We've spoken about before. You can go to Zoho.com, all those sorts of online environments as well now, where you can actually have word processors.
You don't even have to have a word processor on your machine. Just do it all in the web browser.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk briefly about NextG and Telstra. They're doubling their traffic every 8 months. That's not bad for a mobile service provider, is it? But wonder if they have the headroom for that.
Are they doubling the network capacity?
I was about to say, you can feel it in the speeds of the on the network at certain times in certain places, yeah.
Absolutely. But then again, I've got a little on the iPhone that I've been doing my science projects on recently. I have a speed testing little application that I got off the App Store.
Oh, yeah.
And because I can swap SIMs quite easily, I've been stealing SIMs from colleagues in the office who are on different networks and doing my own little test. Now, the Hutchison 3 network, I would have to say, is shabby compared to Telstra.
It's also very inexpensive. It's a very inexpensive way to get into broadband if you're...
It is. It is.
If you're not too fussed about getting great coverage in the, you know, in the outer
areas. In the middle of the CBD, well, just a bit out of the CBD, should I say, where I did this test the other day, I was lucky to get half a megabit per second down on 3, and I was lucky to get 100K up in the, you know, if, say, for example, you wanted to put a picture that you've taken up on Flickr or something like that, which is where you'd use that. It took forever.
Yeah, but that's pretty good, isn't it? 500K down, I would have thought, in my world, that's pretty good.
Okay.
There's people out there with ADSL at home who are on like 512K plans. That's what they get. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. I then took my 3 SIM out and I put a Telstra SIM in exactly the same spot.
Mm-hmm.
I did have to change the IPH codes over. Sorry, Telstra, I know you're not allowed to do that, but I did it. I changed the APN across. And what happened was I got 3 to 4 times the speed differences in both the uploads and the downloads. So that just gives you an indication. I got 3.2 megabits per second down.
So 3 to 4 times better with Telstra.
Yep, 3 to 4 times better, if not 5 times better. And the upload was probably around about the 350 kilobits up, which was pretty good. So that's what you're paying for in a network. And we did try Optus, and Optus was just... I'm shaking my head.
The interesting thing, though, is that's under good, reasonably good conditions. If you start talking major public events, so New Year's Eve in the city, for example, you'll want to be on Hutchison 3 and not on Telstra.
Well, that's another good valid point, isn't it, JD?
Everybody will be on Telstra SMSing and taking photos and flick-picking everybody, and or twit-picking everyone. But very few people on the 3 network. So whilst it might be slow, it's usually fairly consistent.
Consistently slow.
Well, maybe.
Look, sometimes consistency is better than speed.
Well, yeah, maybe. But at the end of the day, you look at what you use your device for these days, and speaking from my habits is really just downloading emails, maybe checking the weather or plugging into an app which just takes a sniff of something online, so you're not there forever and a day. Although one of the things I have tried, Graham, and you might want to try this with your new Western Digital TV Live thingy that you've got, is I created a Flickr account the other day because I wanted to be able to, whilst travelling on my next break, if I'm without the kids or the family or anything like that, I can take my happy snap, push the button on my camera on the phone, and go straight up to Flickr, and the kids push one button on that little box and they can look at my pictures full screen from wherever I might happen to be. And I just thought that was a really good way of real-time communicating visually with the family while you're out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And don't forget that you can also, with a Flickr account, you can plug a photo frame in or something like that. Now, I know that D-Link have a really fantastic photo frame that actually pulls information off your Twitter account, Flickr account, and cycles through it. So while you're away,
that's a great idea.
And you could share a, with a photo frame like that, you could share a whole account with the family. So while it runs away, you can go, oh, look what the relatives are. I think that'd be a lot of fun. Good,
absolutely.
Good use of technology, which is easy for the kids to use as well as for us tech savvy types.
That's a great thing to have on the. It's a great sort of a thing to have on the big screen in the lounge room when you're not actually watching television too. To have a slideshow of your family snaps going on. It's a great idea.
Yeah, it is. And it does a nice slideshow, that thing. It does little 3-second rotates and stuff. And yeah, very nice. Anyway, we weren't talking about that, but that's another
Except that when you're viewing those files, just thinking about what you're saying, I run a Gallery 2, I think it's called, a PHP SQL back-ended server at home.
Well, we're getting very techy now, aren't we?
Yeah, sorry. But it does the same thing as Flickr, except it's on my own server at home, and you can access it from the internet, so the family around the world can see photos of our kids and all the rest of it. But it means that when I upload it to the server, and I can do that online anywhere around the world, same as Flickr, but it means that back home, if they want to watch that photo 100 times, there's no content charges because it's all local in the house.
Very good. Very good.
Whereas every time you look at your Flickr account on the screen...
I can handle that for video. I think that'd be good. So
Flickr is a photo sharing website.
Oh, well done.
If you hadn't come across that, flickr.com.
And there's a lot of, galleries and sharing. You can search for all sorts of things.
It's widely used. Very, very popular.
Be careful with the kiddies around, though.
It is. It's not moderated, is it?
Like with everything. Yeah. And that's one thing, Graham, if you get one of those, and I don't mean to harp about them, but they're a good little box, just be careful. Don't show the kiddies how to use YouTube, all right?
Oh, okay.
Because things, you'll be explaining things. And
unfortunately, I don't have any little kiddies.
No, you're all right.
Yeah, running around, you're likely getting near mine.
I saw mine pick the remote up the other day, and I thought, oh, just as well she went there. Because you go to YouTube and you say, show me the favourites or the most viewed, and traditionally they're not for young people, so that is...
Yeah, YouTube's fairly clean.
Well, try tonight when you go home and see. Yeah, fairly clean's the right one, but it's one in ten that it puts across the top there that's the one that they'll go, what's that?
All right.
So... and one of the other things I've tried too, if you like on YouTube, if you search for, once again, if you've got kids, you can do this, search for like Pixar animations.
Yep.
And the things that you find on there can keep them entertained for hours and hours and hours on end, especially some of the kiddie humor stuff, because there's one there with dinosaurs doing rude things. And when I say rude things, it's just funny. And this toilet humor for kids.
Toilet humor jokes. I love that sort of stuff. Fantastic.
So anyway, that's what we're talking to.
How does the YouTube look in high-def screen, bro? Because it looks okay. It looks pretty nice on my standard def.
Once again, it depends on the quality of the originating material. But if you look at, say, things
some of that stuff isn't gonna expand to a big screen all that well, is it?
No. But if you look at, say, the Monty Python stuff, where the boys have uploaded really good quality video clips, they're still in 4x3, but hey, they hold up really quite well for what the technology was at the time and what it is today. And then you look at things like the Pixar stuff and, wow, you're looking at DVD quality off YouTube and the high def.
Fantastic.
Sort of thing where you can choose that. So have a look. Have a try.
I will.
So that was NextG. They're doubling their... we got awfully distracted there, didn't we?
We got way off topic.
We do. That's what we
Telstra do. Telstra NextG mobile broadband. Yeah, so they're doubling their number of users.
Doubling their traffic in every 8 months. So well done, Telstra. But that just goes to show it's a really high-speed service and it's everywhere and it does and just work.
Yeah, that's all driven by lots of people going out and buying these smartphones and mobile broadband cards. Everybody's doing it now, aren't they?
That's right. Hey, Jade, any news on tethering? Have they worked out how to spell that yet at the land of the big T for iPhones and tethering?
Officially, but you can make it work.
Mr. Thodey came out the other day and said that he'd worked out that time was everything and they were going to actually allow tethering, but I just wondering if you'd heard anything on the grapevine.
Not officially, but if you know how to do it, you can do it without Telstra saying you have to.
Oh, yeah.
Or not.
It's like anything, really, isn't it? So, anyway. All right, I think it's time. We might take a break. The manic minute at the end of the show is going to be the manic half hour, I reckon, the way we're going tonight. Adam's got an epic view from the couch coming up after this. We're going to hear all about...
epic view from the couch?
Epic, yeah. We can go.
Oh, I've just seen what the topic is. I can't wait to hear it.
Absolutely. It's all about the new TiVo and stuff, which is coming up. Big changes. Telstra's released their 100 megabit HFC. That's the big cable that goes under the street. And they're going to flog their T-Box on it.
But it's not competing with Foxtel. That's the important thing.
Oh, look, you know. But this is what I was saying.
It's a different service for a different client.
That's right.
Yes. But earlier in the show when we started, we were saying it's going to be all about content in the future, and this is no different. And television, who's paying for it and all that sort of stuff. Anyway, take a break. Back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Talk Radio.
Cast your mind back to the 90s.
This is a tad awkward, but not quite as bad as Dr. Ron's choice of music.
Anyway, went in there and that...
Before we got distracted beautifully by that, I was going
to
talk about...
Somebody rings me every day at the moment that wants to change my light globes.
Yep, that's it. It was a challenge and an opportunity, wasn't it?
I don't know. good. Glad you cleared the air on that one.
It's out there.
Yeah, as Mulder would say.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show. Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here, Dr. Ron, Dr. Graham, Dr. Justin, here in the studio, all putting our headphones back on again. Come and have a say hello to us, chat.techtalkradio.com.au, especially if you've got your 2 cents you want to add about anything technological related or otherwise. Doesn't stop the boys in the chat, they'll talk about anything.
They are at the moment.
So, it was something about Tiger Woods and play a song for him or something like that. But anyway, come along and say good day, which would be really good. But anyway, let's talk a bit about technology. Content is king. Potentially will be, bandwidth will be an issue. And I think even Dr. Ron, in previous sort of rants that you've had, you've always said that our kids will be wondering why we ever paid for bandwidth in history. You still have that opinion?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely they will.
It's and it's very much going to become like that. It's going to be, what do we get for free?
It'll approach being free. It'll never quite be free, but it'll get that way. The cost will just go down until we just take it for granted.
So you'll pay for the speed of your connection, but not for your bandwidth.
I think it'll be something like, it'll be a model like that, Graham.
They're going the other way in America, though. There's some areas in America where they're going from unlimited bandwidth to paying per gigabyte for bandwidth.
Yeah, I don't understand.
I think that's just an aberration.
I think it is an aberration. Yeah, I don't understand how that's sustainable.
Well, I think there's some providers here in this country that have had a bit of a price hike recently, but they're on, I think they're more on the as you need them, you know, the casual, no contract type sort of plans. I think they're trying to push you down that sort of way of signing up with them and handing over your hard earned cash and
stuff.
Well,
I was with
an
ISP a while back who had completely unlimited plans, allegedly.
Yep.
And although some people did find that if you downloaded a lot, you got an interesting email from them.
You got a tap on the shoulder, did you?
Well, yeah, but at one point they ran a competition to see who could download the most in their month on the unlimited plans, which, oddly enough, that ISP...
screw up your network.
Yeah, exactly. Oddly enough, that ISP is no longer in business.
Was it their last hurrah by chance, was it?
Well, very nearly, yeah.
It's a bit of a bugbear of mine. They do that in the United States a lot. They say unlimited, 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 unlimited mailboxes, unlimited bandwidth, unlimited downloads, but it's not.
Unlimited bandwidth on hosting we've run into in the past, haven't we?
Can I assure you that the word unlimited means something completely different in the United States? Mm. We have got a lot to thank the ACCC for in this country because I don't know of any other country that has an organisation like that that looks after consumers the way that they do, you know?
Because when they say that in the United States, quite clearly it's not unlimited.
No.
It's just completely false and wrong.
Unlimited means
we're not telling you where the limit is.
That's right.
It means that we don't care what everyone does as long as you don't stick your head out and become a problem pimple on our bandwidth or our file serving or something like that. Because as soon as you do, they come up with this great line, it's not fair on everybody else and go away.
Well, bad luck. That's right. We're paying. We've entered into a contract with you. We're paying for a service, which you're saying is unlimited. And they said to us, you pulled down 500 gigabytes of data from your account last month. We went, yeah, and we're going to double that in the next 6 months. Isn't that great? That's what we're paying for. And they've gone, no, you can't do that. Well, hang on a minute. We signed a contract that says that this is what
unlimited.
You said that you would provide. Bizarre.
Yes, so just beware what you enter into there. At least over here, like, look what the ACCC did with Telstra. Remember they pulled that mobile ad off? When Next
Telstra
came out,
Next G, everywhere you need it.
Everywhere you need it, and in fact it wasn't.
It wasn't.
So as a
people
result,
said, no, it's not everywhere I need it at all.
I need it in a place where it isn't,
So, but that's what the ACCC are doing, and I think that's a really good service. Mm. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about what's coming up. We're now starting to see these devices come into our living room, not unlike what Graham and I have got at our house at the moment. Others might have it in the form of a set-top box or something, bringing in digital TV, free-to-air stuff. Others might find it media centres where they log into things like Hulu and YouTube and things like that, pull all this sort of data in or content in over the internet, which is really where it's going to go. Now, if I was a free-to-air television station, I would be worried. I think the role of the free-to-air television is very going to much define itself in the coming years. And even at the moment, you look at all the multiple channel stuff. We've got ABC3 that starts on the end of this week, actually. The kids' thing starts on there. So we've now got
Seven have started their 7.2.
Yep, we've got Go, 72, and ABC3 have kicked off all in the last little bit. Channel 10, who knows what they're doing.
Well, Channel 10 have got their sports channel.
One, yes.
Yeah, their sports channel, which is very popular with those sorts of people.
Is it? Is it really?
Yeah.
Because I would have thought that Channel 10 would have run a dual HD simulcast of a lot of their other content on there, because there's nothing.
No, they've got a dedicated sports channel.
I know. It's terrible.
I know people, customers of mine, they've got a TV hung up because they're sports fans. They've got a plasma screen on the wall in their office that's just permanently on it showing sports all day.
What's wrong with these people?
Well, they're sports buffs. There's nothing wrong with them. They're just different to us. We're tech buffs. They're sports buffs.
You get up in the morning. Yes, you're right, Graham. I'm not going
to
go there.
And SBS have been running multiple channels pretty much since the day they turned on digital. So.
They have.
SBS have got a digital channel that's just news from all around the world. Every hour it's a different news from a different country in a different language.
All right, so where to from here? What we've got lots of new things. The bandwidth is becoming no longer an issue. We're not going to be talking to providers about how fast they can get the information to us. We're going to be talking about what type of information we can get and how much it's going to cost. And here's Adam's view from the couch. You can learn all of it. Actually, the woman who he talks to here is Robbie Minicola. Now, Robbie is the CEO of Hybrid TV, the exclusive licensee of TiVo for Australia and New Zealand. So, without any further ado, let's hit the couch, get a coffee, put your feet up. Here's Adam.
I'm sitting here with Robbie Minicola, who is from TiVo.
Hybrid TV.
From Hybrid TV,
yes.
Who represents TiVo in Australia.
Right.
And we've got some new stuff happening here. They're launching some new video on demand services. They're also launching a new TiVo. Robbie might want to take us through it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, what we're doing with TiVo, it's all about best of broadcast and broadband. And obviously with a TiVo, you can take your analog TV and let you see all the new digital channels like 7.2 and Go and One Sport. But what we've always been focusing on as well is the broadband side of our proposition. And you know, you may be aware that we have the Blockbuster movie service on there now, which has got over 300 movies. What we're launching today is a service called CASPA. And CASPA basically is about on-demand movies, TV, and music on your television. And that's really exciting for us because from Hybrid TV's perspective, that's our platform. Like, we built that puppy, we designed that brand, we got all those content deals with all the studios to deliver that to our customers across Australia.
And this has been developed specifically for Australia and New Zealand. It's not just a US thing that's been
dropped in. No, that's a good point. No, the US, they basically don't develop platforms for the broadband side. They get people that come up and knock on their door and go, "Hi, I'm Netflix. I want to pipe through TiVo." Or, "Hi, I'm Amazon. I want to pipe through TiVo." Because we're a little country over here, we actually contacted all of those people and they didn't really want to know about us because we were too small. So we put our thinking hats on and said, you know what, we should build our own platform because we can build it for Australia and New Zealand. And if any other country wants to access our platform, well, they can give us a call and we'll give them access to the platform.
And what kinds of new services? I mean, we've seen the Blockbuster interface is already there. It's pretty clunky, actually, and there's not really a lot to choose from. People who've seen that and gone, yeah, maybe a bit underwhelmed, what might they see from CASPA that might impress them a bit more?
Well, I'll make a deal with all of your listeners. If anybody reckons that the CASPA UI user interface isn't outstandingly fantastic and better than the Blockbuster one, I'll have to buy them a beer.
Okay.
Blockbuster is still on our service. Blockbuster doesn't disappear, right? But the CASPA interface is different. When you activate your TiVo, or if you choose as a TiVo customer you want to use CASPA, you simply go online, you register your credit card details. It doesn't charge anything to your credit card. You can basically cruise all of the CASPA service and download the free content. It's not until you actually want to pay per view something that you have to load up your CASPA wallet. And you can do that in $15, $30, or $50 increments. That's the first thing. The other thing is the look and feel. There's a lot more information about the movies, a lot more visuals about the movies. The categorization is better. You know, you've got, you know, different genres, very easy to navigate. We've got a lot of kids' content in CASPA. TV content that's free because we want parents to feel like, you know, they don't have to always reach for their wallet to get their kids to enjoy something. With our other TV content where we've got like TV favorites, like Rescue Me is a good example, we give you the first three episodes for free to just get you to experience it so you don't feel like, oh, okay, just experience something, I actually have to pay for it.
Yep.
So Blockbuster is on our platform, but CASPA is basically our platform to get you to feel comfortable with enjoying broadband content on your television in the lounge with no late fees. Yeah.
So we've got new release movies, library movies, premium television, so basically new release television.
Yeah.
Older television shows plus music videos. Is that
music videos and concerts? Mm-hmm. The music videos are all free, and the artist interviews are all free. Mm-hmm. But the concerts are pay per view as well. And I think we've gone live with Beyonce, and we've got I think Guy Sebastian on there. But you know, as new concerts come available, we'll go there as well. The music is the music range are all the studios, not all the labels, not just, you know, Sony, because our music platform is Bandit FM, which is owned by Sony, but it's all the music labels. And basically, when we go live on 1 December, we'll have well over 1,000 hours of content, broadband content to download through TiVo, which will be fantastic. And that just grows. So every day that we ingest more, it just gets added to the pile. Because it's digitized, it just sits there. It's almost like a jukebox, and you just pull it down when you want to.
Now, you said to me before that you're actually aiming to have
more content than Big Pond and more content than iTunes. That's a pretty big call. Big Pond sucks. It's not hard to be better than Big Pond.
Yeah.
But iTunes Australia is not a bad selection, especially compared to the other stuff you can get in Australia. So is that a fair comment? Is that what you're aiming for?
Well, the reason why I think that that's an easy proposition is for two reasons. First of all, iTunes, just like us, have gone to all the majors, right? We've gone to your Sonys, your Paramounts, your Universals, your Warners, Roadshows, all of those, right? They've done it and we've done it. We can all get deals. It's how big is your checkbook, right? And you can say, well, Robbie, if you're going to do it just like they're going to do it, you're going to be at the very minimum equal. How are you going to be better? And the way that I say we're going to be better is because it's more than just the majors. It's independent film producers. It's local film producers. It's film festivals. It's foreign films. It's a lot more niche and long-tail stuff that we want to do. That's the first thing. The second thing is that people like, companies like Apple and Telstra, their business model is all on pay-per-view. So the reality is they're not going to do a deal with anyone that ain't going to get the buckolas in through their front door from your wallet. From our business model, it's a combination of pay-per-view and advertiser-funded. So the reality is we can give you more because an advertiser is willing to help us subsidize that content to you. So we're not always trying to get $3 or $5 or $6 out of your pocket. And that means that we can start exploring other content and put free content up there as well, like the local film school or something. To give you an example of advertiser-funded content, let's look at TV. The movie studios are very, they're not fond of advertising around movies, okay? So let's just, the movie story is going to not have advertising in it because that's just the rules that they lay down. But when we talk about TV content, your TV favorites and your library TV content, you'll have maybe, you know, let's say The Sopranos. You could have 7 series of The Sopranos up there. And what you want to do is you want to start from series 1, episode 1, and go sequentially through every episode, then hit season 2, right? So what will happen is that you will have the option. From next year, you can say, I want to watch that episode. I'll pay $1.95. Or I might say, no, it'll give me an option of saying pay $1.95 or let Toyota pay. Now, we know 7,000 to 1, you'll let Toyota pay $1.95, right? But you actually allowed, gave the permission for Toyota to pay for that in exchange for you watching their ad. Okay. Now, what we're not doing is doing an enormous amount of ads or ads similar to what you see on free-to-air television. There'll probably be 1, maybe 2, if at that, advertisers in a TV program, and it'll invariably be a top, a tail, and an intermission ad, and that's it.
Yeah.
The exchange for them paying for you to watch that TV program in broadband is that you can't fast-forward through their ads. But people, it's a trade-off. The old school is, I'm going to put advertising in front of you, whether you like it or not, and then eventually you'll forget why you're getting free to air for free. I mean, the reality is that the reason why we get to watch free TV in this country is because of all of those advertisers. But what we do is we do everything to not watch the ads. And really, that's not fair to the advertiser because he's funding all the content. So what we're doing in this situation is saying, look, if you don't want to watch an ad, we respect that, but pay your $1.95.
Yeah.
You know, but we know that people will say, you know what, I will let Dove pay or I will let Toyota pay.
But they now feel like they've had a choice in saying.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And that's the whole idea. That's what we've learned.
The nearest rival, even though I don't know if you can get one yet, is Telstra's T-Box that we're talking about. It looks like a very similar product. And again, it's relying, well, that's relying on being on the end of a very high-speed Big Pond cable where you're not restricted to one ISP. But that seems to be the future of where these kind of things are going. Yeah. One box on the end of a fast pipe that will give you free-to-air and online content. How do you see that sort of field playing out in the next couple of years?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to note that what we've developed in CASPA is actually telco agnostic. So, you can be with any telecommunications provider or ISP and you can access CASPA. Already, TiVo customers have all kinds of internet connections and they can access CASPA. I mean, primarily, I would assume that the Telstra T-Box and that proposition is for Telstra customers.
Yeah, right? I think you've got to be on the Big Pond cable because you've got to have the 100 megabit link.
Right, right. But at the same time, if if I had my choice, I would rather pick the service provider that I want, and then I'd rather have the best of what's available out there. Mm. So we kind of pride ourselves on being telco agnostic and give the value proposition to the consumer, but not force them to be with any ISP. Yeah. That's the first thing. The second thing is that although, yes, you might be able to get it unmetered with a telco like Telstra that have a T-Box, you're still going to have to pay for that content because they paid for those rights. I don't know, and maybe Telstra have, you know, visions of this, but I don't know how they're going to make it advertiser-funded. We have the great fortune of being owned by the Seven Media Group and Television New Zealand. So we have direct links and relationships with media agencies and all the advertisers to facilitate that. So I guess my question would be, in the longer term, how's Telstra going to make my on-demand content free? Because that's what I want to know.
Yeah.
You know, maybe today I have to pay for it, but is there a roadmap when it's free? And we all know that there's no such thing as free content without advertising or subscription.
Yeah.
If I want free content, I'm paying a subscription to Foxtel, so I'm not paying on VOD fees. And outside of VOD, I get free to air, but I watch advertising. There's no in between. So the question that I would have if I was a Telstra customer when I rang up is say, when is it going to be free? And what am I going to have to do to get it free?
Yeah.
You know, does that mean I've got to give you a 5-year commitment to my ISP? I mean, what's the handcuff? What's the golden handcuff, right? So I think those are the things we have to think about. National broadband network, for me, is greater than me becoming a size 8. Me becoming a size 8 is never going to happen. But the national broadband network will. And that...
Me either.
Yeah. And that liberates us. What that means is that, you know, before we're shopping around with internet based on how fast can you go, how big is how fast is the speed, how big is the capacity, and, you know, how good is your wireless modem router, is it in, is it G or whatever. All that conversation gets thrown down the gurgler because now I've actually got that pipe to my home anyway. I've already started at 100 megabits per second, thank you very much, instead of this stupid 512 KBs that I'm living off, right? And I've got unlimited capacity. So my first question in the NBN world is not what is your speed and what is your capacity, Mr. Telco. My first question is, forget about telcos. Who's got the best content and services for me? That's what I'm going to choose. So when you look at, you know, strategically, what's Hybrid TV trying to do? We are trying to be a CSP. A content and service provider.
Yeah.
And what we're doing with Hybrid Smart Street in Tasmania is about saying, okay, here's your broadcast through Digital Terrestrial, here's your broadband through CASPA, but we're developing services that are both government services and commercial services that work on the television through the remote control to the average Joe Bear sitting on the couch.
Yeah.
So that's kind of our raison d'etre.
And there's a new model TiVo coming out as well.
Yep, on the 1st of December, we're launching the TiVo 320. Essentially, it's double the hard drive. One of the biggest requests is make the hard drive bigger, especially now that all the new digital channels are coming up. People are season passing, you know, more than what's on 7, 9, and 10. They're season passing Go, you know, One Sport, and 7.2. So it's double the hard drive size. It obviously has access to CASPA. All of our customers with the original TiVo have access to CASPA. But, you know, I'm not going to lie to you. The TiVo 320, the difference is the hard drive is double. But all of the software changes we've got for the TiVo 320 are being sent over broadband to our TiVo 160 users.
Yeah.
So they're not kind of missing out on software upgrades and things like that.
And then the 320 comes in at the same price as the old 160,
yep,
and now the 160's dropped.
Yep, but what we're doing is for December, January, it's kind of a holiday edition. We're including the home networking package inside of the TiVo 320 purchase price, which is, you know, cost $200 if you buy it online. So it's really good value.
So it sounds like you've got a lot coming up next year.
A lot. And we've got to talk again on December 1 when we've got another surprise coming your way.
Great. All right. Well, thank you for joining me on the couch.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Well, if you've been reading the chat while that's been going on, it's gone off in there at the moment. Mm. They're all talking about that. But, yeah, free content, where it's all at. That was Robbie Minicola, who is the CEO of Hybrid TV, which is the exclusive licensee of TiVo in Australia and New Zealand, and talking about CASPA, which, by the way, if you're an iiNet subscriber, Casper is free to you for bandwidth, and also Banded FM that she mentioned as well. You get free music downloads. When I say free, you've got to pay for them. But the bandwidth,
but the bandwidth
that you use to connect between their server and your home is free. So there's another buying criteria, really, isn't it? When you ring up your ISPs, what do I get for free, as in bandwidth, as opposed to free as in content?
I'm just looking at the TiVo website now. iiNet, Internode, iPrimus and Adam Internet are all offering unmetered TiVo connections.
Yeah. Has Adam got his own ISP?
Adam, isn't it?
Has he? Different Adam, I think.
Oh, sorry.
Don't give the game away. I think you want to keep that secret.
Oh. Yeah. I'm sure it's a different Adam.
Anyway, if you'd like to have a chat to Adam, he's actually on our chat as we speak, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. And here's a few. I was just reading through some of my tweets earlier on today, and let's put a dollar on the table, see if you can work out who tweeted. Sorry, scrolling. Who tweeted this? You know, for religious zealots, Apple fanboys have surprisingly foul mouths when someone dares to challenge their faith. Who do you reckon tweeted that?
Adam.
I think that's what drew everyone to his article after that, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, did he?
I think he's got a bit of flack. I haven't read some of the comments down there.
He wrote a blog about the new Magic Mouse, the touch mouse that Apple have put out recently. And he's quite right. It's quite limited in what it does. I went and had a play with one myself recently.
I was about to say, what does it do that others...
And so the Mighty Mouse, which is its predecessor...
Is that the big 18 one you had for the...
No. That was a fantastic... with the joystick on it. That was fantastic. No, the Mighty Mouse that was its predecessor was a standard Apple mouse, one button, and it had a little nipple in it, which was a tiny, tiny little rollerball that allowed you to track web pages left and right and up and down and so forth. But it got gunked up with fluff and you needed to clean it religiously. Mind you, mine's actually not
bad. But
that's
what they used to do. That's why it went optical and then got rid of them altogether and went to pens.
But this is on the top of the mouse, not underneath the mouse. Yeah.
So trackball built into a mouse.
Instead of the track wheel that a lot of mice
have. Nothing worse than fluff in your mouse, is there?
So what they've done is they've turned the surface of the mouse, the whole surface, into a touchpad. So that you still... And this is what confused me. I thought, oh, it's a touchpad. I'll just move my finger on the top of it and it'll do all the mousey stuff. But no, it's actually a mouse that you physically move around the table still, and you use the surface of it to do the scrolling only. It doesn't do much else.
Oh, that's a bit disappointing, isn't it?
So you can't pinch the screen or extract the screen, which I thought it would do, but it didn't.
So it's single touch.
So it's, well, not you can multi-touch. You can put, it's multi-touch to a point. So you can do multi-touch to move pages left and right and pages up and down, as opposed to just scroll a little bit at a time with your single finger. So it does do some multi-touch things in that it picks up more than one finger and does things with that stroke. But it doesn't do the pinch extract bit at the moment. Now, it's probably just software, and the next driver might well do that. But at the moment, it doesn't. And so it's pretty limited in what it can do. Now, Adam, you know, it was a very balanced appraisal, I thought. But, the people that decided to comment thought somehow otherwise.
Well, that's what happens. But it's good to get the communications open with people, especially when it comes to technology. You just talk about... be able to use your finger on a mouse type sort of thing. The Wacoms. They actually...
Yeah, only Wacom call it Wacom.
Do they?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. The new bamboos come out. I think you can use your finger on those. I could stand corrected, but I believe you can use your finger on those. You don't need a pen or stylus.
Got to get hold of one of these to try it.
You should have swiped that one we had that we gave away.
I wanted to,
play before you put it back in the box.
The only problem is, I don't know if you've ever seen my desk, but I'd have issues with having somewhere to put it. That's the only problem I'd have with a tablet.
Now, I've seen Andrew use a tablet and he has a little stylus holder.
Yeah,
do you still have those?
I do, yes. The problem is, because we've got four of these little stylus or the Wacoms in the office, what happens is that you put your pen down or you take it to another desk. And then at the end of the day, you've got one desk with four pens on it. And everyone's going, where's my pen gone?
It's like a little...
Because you can't use them without a pen, but maybe the new ones you can.
It's like a little electronic inkwell for your stylus.
Yes.
Yeah, so when you're done with it, you see this, you just go like that. And But there you go.
Doesn't work well on radio. Why don't they just have a little thing to attach the pen to the stylus to
good
the tablet
question.
So you don't lose it?
You should go work for them.
Okay.
They might be able to incorporate that in the next design. Whilst we're talking about television, before we get too distracted...
It'd be like a supermarket. You can have alarm bells ring if it goes more than 3 metres away from the tablet.
Yeah, who stole my pen?
Proximity to...
on your stylus. Whoop.
The other added benefit of a Wacom stylus is the fact that it works on your Nintendo DS as well.
Oh, okay.
So if you lose your little stylus, you can use your Wacom pen on it as well, I discovered the other day. The only downside with it is it won't work on the iPhone. I've tried that on numerous occasions, purely out of habit. And,
no, it's got to be a finger.
It's got to be a finger, yeah.
When have you ever got time to play on a DS?
My kids have got them.
When
I've got time to play on them, because I'm booting them up or changing their R4 chip in the back of them, that's what I'm doing.
I thought you weren't kicking back in the office with your DS.
Oh, yeah. As if I've got time to do that.
That's what I wondered.
Or maybe you've got the DS controller for your AVID video editing suite.
AVID? Right? Where'd you come from? AVID.
AVID, sorry.
dear, yeah. What was I going to say? I was going to talk about Channel 7 being the first to go with interactive ads. Channel 7, who are obviously co-owner thereof of TiVo, as we just heard of just then, is set to become the first free-to-air television network to offer interactive ads from April via the new TiVo set-top box. Now, this is probably all intertwined with TiVo. Because what Robbie was just saying before, now correct me if I'm wrong, is the fact that if you're prepared to pay to skip the ads, you can skip the ads. And if you want it for free, what is it, $1.98 or whatever it was she said? $1.98. So we're looking at potentially being able to skip the ads in the TiVo.
Which ads you watch.
Has anyone here seen Starship Troopers?
Yeah.
A long time ago.
Do you remember all the ads in Starship Troopers? Would you like to know more?
What product placement? No, I don't.
Someone out there will recognise it. I'm sorry. Everyone here is staring at me blankly.
I remember the advertisements in Minority Report.
Oh, yes.
And as the main character
there,
walking past the billboards and saying,
he said, hello. Yeah, you haven't done this for a long time. And last time you walked down here, you bought one of these. Do you fancy one of these right now? Well, very much.
Is that what the world's coming to?
Yeah, very much targeted at the person that was walking past.
Why do you think they put GPSs in phones?
Why did they put GPSs in phones?
So they could do that to you later on. That's exactly why.
Location-based advertising.
Yes.
Do you reckon that'll happen?
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, absolutely will. Okay, yeah,
I'm glad it's
just what, you don't think they put him in for safety reasons, do you?
I just thought it was good because you could geotag your photos when you upload them to Flickr. So that when you upload a photo of Dr. Ron sitting in the studio, for example, it puts a pin in the map of where the studio is. So that's why I'm not going
to
do it.
No, that's how they sell it to you. That's not why they put it there in the first place.
You thought I was a conspiracy theorist.
Absolutely.
Yeah, listen to this one.
You've trained him well. By the way, how did that moon landing go, Dr. Ron? Are you still over that yet? No?
Oh, no. Don't ask.
I think it's time for a cup of tea and a Bex. Oh, good idea. Lie down.
Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link.
Now, let's talk about Freeview.
Hey, someone just joined the wave.
They're the people I want to avoid the calls from.
Comes in very handy, especially when your files get really, really big and corruption takes place.
So you're an AAAAAAA.
Dude, it's not even a beta. It's just for us to play around with.
They also cited taxes and freight costs.
Just mount it on your desktop and run it direct. It's a big risk.
Oh, you watch the webcam.
Yeah.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Australia's loveliest technology radio show.
Who likes a bit of 3D in the cinema? Isn't it?
Well, that was fantastic when we saw it.
Absolutely. Looking forward to seeing Avatar in the not too distant too, and the big IMAX in 3D.
Yes.
Is Avatar just going to be the first 3 minutes in 3D, or is it the whole thing?
I think it's the whole thing, but hey, don't... Sorry, that was disappointing Harry, wasn't it?
It was a bit dodgy with Henry Pothead. Yeah, we were going there expecting there to be a whole movie in 3D.
They never said it was going to be the whole movie.
It said Henry Pothead in 3D.
In 3D.
It
did not. It said selected scenes in 3D.
Oh, I didn't read that.
No, I didn't see that, Graham. Where was that?
That was in the fine print down the bottom where it said smoking's not recommended for your health, isn't it? Anyway, the reason I was saying that is that in the UK at the moment, and I notice Darren from the UK is there. I don't know whether he's local or not. He might have gone back to the UK. But the 3D cinema explosion has just gone through the roof over there. Everyone's flocking back to the cinemas to see all these, you know, Pixar things in 3Ds and probably Avatar things and stuff like that. So there's somewhat of a renaissance going on. So there you go. It's another reason for content. Content's going to be king.
Now, that's one of the interesting things. You said Pixar there, but of course all the computer-generated animations will be able to be reshot, presumably, in 3D.
Maybe. Probably. Mm. It's very interesting editing in 3D. The AVID, as you call it, editing software that I run, supports stereoscopic editing. And it's quite an interesting topic. We should talk about it one night. It might get a bit too techie, but there's three types of stereotopic editing. One is where you've got one picture on top of the other. One's where you've got two pictures side to side, and you've got an interlacing thing. It's very smart the way it all works, so you can actually do
things in 3D. Depending on the technology used in the camera to shoot it, I presume.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, depending on the file types you get out of the camera and how the animators render it and all that sort of stuff, it's quite easy to actually edit it in 3D. Oh, well, I wouldn't call it too complicated. It's just new gadgets we've got from a content production point of view.
Well, it is an interesting direction. I suppose it's a way that, at the moment, cinemas are differentiating themselves from the home cinema, because you've got a big screen or even a projector at home and a sound system that's almost as, sounds as good as the cinema sound system. So how's the cinema going to get you to go to the cinema instead of watching it at home? I suppose the 3D is one way.
Yeah, but it's also a good night out. I've got to take the missus to the movies very shortly. There's nothing that we can agree on, really, that we both want to see. I don't know whether you've run into that problem, but I want to... You want to come see Avatar? No. She wants to go see Julia and Julia or something. Like, what's that? Meryl Streep thing. Anyway.
Now, I saw something in the tech news the other day, which was it was a display design for a car to put in the centre of the dashboard of the car.
And Mercedes-Benz had that.
Mercedes, that's the one, the Mercedes-Benz one. And depending on what angle you looked at it, you could see a different picture.
So the passenger could see
the movie, the DVD or the telly or whatever it happened to be, but the driver got the sat-nav display. Yeah, the satellite navigation display.
We had that as a gadget like months ago.
Oh, did we?
Yeah, but it was pie in the sky stuff at the time.
Yeah, now it's real.
They've got this in production now.
Well, the Jags have already got it out, and Merck are releasing it shortly.
And apparently it's a big problem for regulation, because technically the placement of the screen and showing a moving picture, and the regulations don't say that it's only viewable from, don't take into account that it's not viewable from the angle of the... of the driver, so although it is designed to be safe, it's technically illegal in some countries. So, and probably would be here, I imagine.
Check your local road rules.
So, you get another example of the technology going out ahead of the regulations. But can you imagine doing this in your lounge room and have the screen hanging on the wall?
No remote control fights anymore.
And Andrew can watch Avatar from his seat, and his wife can watch the chick flick from the seat across the other side of the room.
You both need headphones on.
Thanks for all the recommendations in the chat tonight too, guys. It's been really handy. Yes, you're right, Graham. We all need headphones, because what do you do with the sound? Because sound more so than pictures is a very selfish thing. There's only one spot to sit in the room for sound, and it has to be front and in the middle.
You solve that with headphones, and by encoding, instead of encoding it in six channels, you encode it binaurally, so that you have...
Binaurally. Is that in the dictionary?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, is it?
Binaural recording, yeah. So you listen, it's only a two-channel recording, but it has all the phase information in it, so it sounds like it's got all the direction information in it within your headphones.
Oh, fantastic. What a great concept. Oh, where's it going to go to next? What about making the floor shake when the Death Star flies over the top and all that?
Well, you build that...
You
build that into the armchair. You can buy seats designed for gaming that have that built in.
They've got everything, haven't they?
Subwoofer built into the seat, yeah.
It's been done.
Can I have the seat with a subwoofer, please? Just go I wonder if you get that Harvey Normans or something like that. Hi, I want a cinema seat with a subwoofer, please. Oh, my goodness.
You'll be wanting smell-o-vision next. Like, you've got sight and sound and touch, and what's the next sense that you have to accommodate?
I dread to think.
All right, let's
shut everyone up.
Moving right along, let's talk. Have we spoken much about the Apple Computer Inc. company this evening?
Oh, you want to talk about something on the rundown?
Yeah, we might as well. Let's just gloss over it briefly. Mr. Jobs, Steve Jobs, actually sent an email to a developer based in Sydney who'd been doing a little bit of, how would you say, he wrote an application which lets you back up your iPod without any...
But that wasn't the problem. The problem was the name.
That's right.
He called it iPod Rip.
Yeah. And he was he got a cease and desist letter from the man himself saying...
You can't use the word iPod as part of your name.
Yeah, yeah. So that's
called iRip now.
iRip?
iRip.
Do you? That's good.
But he's not allowed to have any reference that the thing used to be called, or he's not allowed to send out emails to existing subscribers saying what you used to know as iPod Rip is now called iRip. He's not allowed to do any of that.
But Crunch Gear that I'm looking at the moment, iRip, formerly known as iPod Rip.
Well, that's just it. But people like us
talking
about it.
The news stories can do it, but he can't do it on his website or in his mailouts.
Yeah. Matthew Peterson, age 25, has been creating Mac programs since he was 17. And the most popular one has been this one, iPod Rip, which is now called Rip. There you go. Well done, Matthew. Good on you.
And just to make a point, it's not just him. He's got, half a dozen or a dozen employees or something working for him maintaining these applications. So
correct. Even Steve's email's up there. It says, change your app name. Not that big a deal. Well, there you go. It's not really. Just if you want to be found on a search engine.
Tell that to someone who's been building up their brand name for 8 or 9 years.
Absolutely. It would leave a funny taste in your mouth. Speaking of that.
The iPhone hasn't been out that long.
Oh, sorry. Well, however many years it is. it's iPod rip, not iPhone rip. So.
But it's only for iPhones, isn't it? It's an application.
iPod rip. I don't know. We'll get back to you on that one. Do you smoke around your Apple device?
Because no, just as well.
Chances are, if you do, don't bother taking it back for a warranty workout if you need to. Computer giant Apple is refusing to honour warranties on broken machines belonging to smokers. Apple has already declined to work on at least 3 machines in the US, claiming insiders were so heavily coated in tar and potentially poisonous substances that they posed a health risk to technicians working on machines.
Yes.
Maybe that's what we need to put on smoking packets in Australia now. Not only...
Yes.
Well, void your warranty.
May void your warranty on any app, or will void your warranty on any Apple device. I thought that was quite cute, really. And it's also interesting to note, and also a testament to the Apple empire, that now Apple devices have grabbed a third of mobile data that's out there. Now, this is from the UK. I'm not sure how this applies to Australia, but Apple's iPhone and iPod Touch models account for as much as one-third of worldwide mobile data traffic. A recent report from the mobile advertising specialist AdMob said that the Apple handsets account for 32% of its worldwide mobile data requests during October, a rise of 7% on the previous month.
And I reckon that's not captured. I think the term is generated because people just aren't using their mobile devices for data as much as people are on the iPhone.
Yeah, so you're saying that it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, really. It's
I don't think that it's
records.
I don't think it's a competition about there's this mobile broadband data competition, and they've captured 30% of it. I reckon they've generated 30% of the traffic.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah, simply because the iPhone exists, it's generating a lot more traffic. It's causing people to use a lot more mobile data than they would have.
Which I think the iPhone ISPs didn't exist. Happy about.
And just to go back a step, the iRip, formerly known as iPod Rip, is an application for your desktop, so it runs on a Mac OS X or Windows XP or whatever, and it allows you to copy content off your iPod, which can be a particular problem if you've lost your iTunes installation. If you say you've had a hard disk crash on your main machine or something, and you want to get your music back off your iPod.
Okay, so it's not an iPhone.
It's not an iPhone app. It's a desktop app. Yeah.
Very good.
All right, I think I might get one of those. I wonder if it works on the iPhone for backing up music off that.
I've got a great little app that I carry around on my iPod that allows me to copy stuff on and off, and I'll talk to you about it a bit later on. A
couple of interesting things just before you move off the Apple bandwagon for the moment. There's a new iPhone out in the wild that's being tested, apparently, according to all the
a new one.
Another new one.
Yep.
This is after the 3GS or whatever it's called.
There's an iPhone 3.1, which is a new series not seen before, that's appeared on the network.
Oh, I've got an article on this here. Sorry, this is one of the ones. This is the rundown that always...
I'm jumping ahead on the rundown.
When you say it's appeared on the network, what does that mean?
People have logged it on their websites as being the type of device that's accessed their website.
You know, on your website, it comes up and says what operating system comes in and does it.
Yeah, like in your web server logs and stuff.
Yeah, a string thought to identify the next generation of iPhone has turned up in analytics logs. Its prototype being tested in specifically San Francisco. The iPhone 2.1 identifier began to appear in logs during October 2008, long before the iPhone 3GS was released. Now, Pandav, developed by iBart, a group in San Francisco, rapidly transmit the system. Sorry, I'm just reading here. iPhone 3.1, as you were saying, JD, is now starting to appear in logs, and there is no such beast.
Now, it's interesting because I was saying the same about the 3GS when iPhone 2.1 came out on networks. You can actually hack your phone to tell whatever you like. So
But
if you really wanted to, you could turn your phone into a 4.1 and, really beat up the media. So
but
just be careful.
Presumably,
it looks like there's a new phone out there being tested.
Mm.
And just in other news, I'm trying to find the particular... In Poland, someone dropped the bomb.
I should say JD is scrolling through on his iPhone looking for these stories to talk about.
Oh, no, I saw this earlier.
Preparation's everything.
I just had to find it.
Come to the meetings.
Yeah, indeed. So a website in Poland, PC Lab, has inadvertently published that the next Mac Pro is going to have 2 6-core Golftown processors in it, running 50% faster and 50% less power than the current quad-core machines.
Ooh.
So that's very interesting, but there's no prices or anything like that. But
so that's just some leaked technical
some
specs.
Leaked tech specs, which have been taken down.
Very exciting.
All right. I was going to try and do the manic minute. Let's try the manic 30 seconds here because
we're
really
running
out.
Now.
Okay, bushfire warning system in final tests for Victoria. That's
20,000
going to be
calls
good.
This week.
Yes. How many?
20,000 calls they put out this week.
Oh, good. Oh,
yeah, Telstra people I've spoken to say it's working quite well, all things considered.
All things considered, yeah. Even though...
But
yeah.
it's still based on billing address, yes, not based on location, which it should be.
That's so right.
It's still... Yeah.
Yeah, that was the thing, billing. No, that's silly. It's got to be sales and errors.
From a design point of view, it's still dumb.
Yeah, correct. Microsoft is helping Apple to crack the enterprise. It's a bizarre game of give and take. Apple and Microsoft are both picking away at different sides of the enterprise mobile phone market, which is interesting. JB Hi-Fi got hacked.
Yeah, I heard that. The website got hacked.
I used their website on the weekend.
Did you? Or was it you, was it?
It must have been.
When you say you used it.
There's a new illegal file sharing level monitoring tool that's out there. We were going to talk about AT&T and Telstra believe data had no future. Well, that speaks volumes. Telstra streamlines the broadband plans. We touched on briefly. IKEA iPhone worm creates land. You know the guy who did the Rick Rolling?
The iPhone virus.
He got offered a job, and that's all pretty interesting. Yachty's in the Sydney to Hobart now. I've got SMS weather updates between here and there for the Sydney.
They got mobile coverage in the middle of Bass Strait there.
Oh, who knows? And widgets are going to be the next big thing on the small screen.
Yeah, they said that years ago.
Oh, yeah, it's back. Anyway, Oddspot website and gadget and all that stuff after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, proudly sponsored by D-Link, building networks for people.
Suffer and suck it out. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio.
We've now got the technology. It's time to get silly with it.
Are people still using Internet Explorer?
That would be a shame.
Do you reckon it'll take up? I reckon the youth of today will love it.
Like a Dr. Evil's boardroom.
Yeah, it does change the way the browser behaves.
Oh, I'm excited.
Don't worry about Kaspersky.
Get into your local road sign.
Yeah.
I like a fresh install, me personally, but nonetheless.
Entertaining.
I was in until you said maggots.
Informative.
How do you decide who to follow?
Independent.
Oh, aren't they the biggest crock?
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
No.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool. Interesting.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my own.
This week's gadget is the Sonos Bundle 150 music streaming system. T3 magazine says the Sonos Bundle 150 is the pinnacle of music simplicity. Not only does it provide everything you need to convert your humble cottage into a Wi-Fi audio haven, it's also achingly easy to install. Almost every major format is catered for, including lossless FLAC.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, we've used FLAC, actually, with Tech Talk, haven't we, Graham?
We did experiment with it at one point.
Yeah. A super smart wireless controller puts you in charge of the whole system and displays cover art and track info on its LCD screen. Alternatively, you can control everything via your iPhone or Apple Touch with a special application.
Do they work, JD? Those remote controller things?
Oh, yeah. I use my iPhone to remote control my Apple TV.
Is that a free app?
Yes.
Oh, good.
There you go. T3 gives it 5 stars and rated...
That's gutsy.
Yeah, rated at best compared with music streamers from Philips, Sony and Logitech. The Sonos one came out in front. The RRP is nearly $2,200, so it would want to be good. More info from playback.com.au. That's the Sonos Bundle 150.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
This week's website is sharethis.com. SHARETHIS. Sharethis.com. ShareThis makes it very easy to share ideas and to get good stuff online. It's great for bloggers. So if you're wanting to be able to share blog posts or articles, for example, you maybe have a WordPress blog and you want to add a plugin.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is add some code to your site's template, and then every new post you make will have a Share This button. Pops up a little applet at the bottom of each post or the bottom of each story or web page.
That's cute, isn't it?
Yeah, it lets you very easily share the post or the content on MySpace or via email or via Twitter or through StumbleUpon or whatever network you decide you want to use, so you can configure the applet to support the services and the networks that you want. So if you're a social media tragic like many of us here, and you want an easy way to encourage subscribers to share your content, then this is it. Have a look.
An interesting thing that I heard during the course of the week too, and I don't mean to distract you, but Google put out a one of their webmaster updates the other day about people that like to come along and spam in tags, like, you know, for example, comments, like Adam's thing, for example, when he put his point up today, people come and put their own link to a website or do whatever it is. That actually will now have very big detrimental effects to people whose website they pointed to. So don't put... If you want to go and put comments on people like The Ages or whoever's website, don't link to your site because it's not going to do you too much good. So, and that's just new. It came out this week, so go and check out the Google blogs and Google webmasters.
It's a whole science doing that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so I don't know how this will go with what you just talked about there and tags and stuff. Probably a little different, but no, it's an ever-changing field in those sort of things. So, anyway, watch this space.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
A brief message about a dead cat.
What?
Caused fur to fly in Canada a couple of weeks ago, sparking rumours about the demise of the Iron Lady, former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher.
Oh, what?
A short text message which read, "Thatcher has died," kicked off a brief diplomatic flurry among members of Canada's parliament and their advisers at a black tie dinner. Upon learning the news via mobile or BlackBerry at a soiree honouring Canadian military families a few weeks ago, some 2,000 shocked conservatives said to revere the Iron Lady of British politics and their advisers reportedly huddled to discuss an appropriate reaction. They contacted Downing Street to confirm that Mrs. Thatcher had indeed passed away, but now they're all a bit baffled and assured them that... No, she hadn't. It turned out the message was sent by Canadian Transport Minister, Mr. John Baird, from his home in Toronto to a person at the dinner to say his beloved 16-year-old grey tabby, named after Margaret Thatcher, had died. A spokesperson for Prime Minister Stephen Harper's office was not immediately available for comment. There you go. It's the power of the SMS, the power of the text, Andrew.
Absolutely. That was the website, Gadget and Hotspot of the Week, brought to you by Dr. Ron of Dr. Ron Enterprises. Thank you very much for that, Dr. Ron.
Recruited, spoken and authorised.
And may I just say that it's been wonderful, your contributions in that set. Normally they're chosen by Dr. Ron each and every week when we come along. And next week will be no different for our last show for 2009. And hopefully we'll have a few people in the studio. You never know who might rock up on the day.
You're putting the pressure on now. Yeah.
Absolutely. It could be just Graham and I, but, you know, we might get Adam. JD, you've just said no, you're not coming in.
Oh, that's for next week.
Better offer already.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, dearie me.
Anyway, well, there's the word goes out. So, Adam?
So, for those who want to tune in for a bit of fun and frivolity for the last live show of 2009, the people that we were in New South Wales are probably just coming to terms with this radio show. And we're going
to... Well, they'll get to hear some stuff in the summer series that they probably haven't heard before.
Absolutely.
Adam in our chat room says, "Dr. Ron, keep the mo. Mo-semba." Not going to happen, Adam. Sorry. Thank you very much to D-Link, our sponsor.
Oh, yes.
And D-Link sponsored the program this week.
Click the links, guys.
Click the links on our webpage to access the D-Link products.
They've got a good special at the moment, too.
Especially with Christmas coming up. Absolutely. It's a great time to be shopping.
You get some free iTunes stuff if you go and buy a selected product of theirs. Click the link and have a look. It's pretty good. All right. Same time next week, guys. It's for the last show for 2009. So, make sure you tune in. And I promise you that Dr. Ron will be on deck after that to choose the music for 2009 Summer Series. So until then.
A clean-shaven Dr. Ron.
Absolutely. Until next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03-9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.